understanding the link between exercise and better mental health. Most of us have experienced that great feeling that comes after a bike ride, a swim, a run, or even a game of flag football or pickup basketball. So it's no surprise that on some level, exercise can boost one's mood and outlook. But there's an increasing body of research that takes this idea a step further, showing that exercise can be a frontline treatment for serious mental health diagnoses, such as depression and anxiety, and that exercise may help prevent depression in people who are at risk. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll learn more about the latest research on exercise and mental health. And, as you've been hearing, we are debuting our new theme music. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We all know that exercise is good for our heart and waistline, but did you know it can also have positive effects on a person's mental health? Today, we're going to discuss what we know about the impact of exercise on our mental well-being and what new research still needs to be done. With me in the studio, Scott Douglas, a contributing editor for Runner's World and the author of 8 books. His most recent is Running is My Therapy. Glenn Stevenson is an associate professor of psychology and program coordinator for neuroscience at the University of New England. And Kate Foley is the fitness manager at Ocean View at Falmouth. She has worked in cardiac rehabilitation at both York Hospital and Maine Medical Center. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you find yourself feeling better after you exercise? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. And Scott, I'm going to start with you. For you, this exploration into the link between exercise, specifically running, and mental health is personal. You write about running, what running has done for you. Can you share a bit of your story? What happened in the ninth grade?
So in ninth grade, I sort of became, for lack of a better word, depressed. And I also started running in ninth grade. And at that time, I sort of had a realization that I, in retrospect, of how profound running is and has been for my mental health for close to 4 decades now. I wrote this book because nobody else had written this book. I am someone who one of many who uses running or other forms of exercise to sort of gird their mental health. And I didn't see any books really that sort of talked about it from a perspective of here's what it's like to live it. And here's all the facts about why, what we sort of experience subjectively, intuitively, why it's actually a fact. And hopefully we'll get into some of the really interesting things that I learned that I sort of feel like I shouldn't have had to write a book to have learned.
Well, it is interesting because you say what we know subjectively, intuitively. Anybody who you're running with knows that this is good for them, but maybe right. Not doesn't understand why or how much.
Right. And, you know, so the feeling of finishing a run or a bike ride or a swim and being in a better mood, that's universal. You know, it's very rare that somebody finishes a workout and says, like, boy, I'm more angry. I'm in a much worse, more anxious
now. I wish I hadn't
done
that, right?
right. How many people go to bed at night and say, boy, I wish I hadn't worked out today, you know? But the second aspect of that is sort of the sort of ongoing mental health benefits that are more than just the daily sort of mood hits. And that's what I really wanted to look at in my book and to explain to my fellow runners and, you know, we can broaden from running to, you know, pretty much any form of purposeful exercise, that this is something that, as you said, you know, we know it's good for our heart, we know it's good for our muscles and everything, but there's increasing evidence that is at least as important for our mental health and our brain health, if we can distinguish between the two, than as it is for cardiovascular health.
Well, Glenn, let's talk about that. What do we know that we didn't know just 5 or 10 years ago about what is the latest research telling us about the link between mental health and exercise?
Yeah, so, wow, that's a loaded question. By that, I mean really broad and a good one. I mean, I would say that we've learned more about the brain in the past 10 years than we have in the history of time. You know, in this planet anyway. I can't speak about exoplanets, but certainly in the past 10 years, there's been leaps and bounds made. However, so that's the good news, right? But however, maybe the slightly bad news is that we don't really fully comprehend the neurobiology of health and disease yet. I mean, there are clues, but we have a lot to do. I guess one way to approach that question or your question is to really ask, at what level of analysis do we want to pursue this, right? So do we want to look at, so let's move from small to large, for example. So do we want to look at genes, right? What are the effects of exercise on genes? Do we want to go a little bit larger? Do we want to look at molecules? Do we want to look at cells? How about circuitry or regions of the brain, or even bigger still, networks in the brain? And for all we know, we might be hunting down the wrong path, right? But it's exciting. The one thing I like to say about science is that, or scientists, is that we can feel really smart on a Monday when we've discovered something, and then feel really dumb the next day because the process sort of spawns so many more questions that we, you know what I mean?
We feel that we're so never satisfied. Right, so we don't fully understand now why exercise benefits our mental health, but we do understand that it does.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll give you, I mean, I can give you an example. So let's see what might be a fun one to look at. Let's go cells. Let's go with cells. So in the brain, we know that, for example, stress will downregulate processes of nerve cells, right? So they're called dendrites and axons, and they'll sort of there's a natural pruning process, but stress will actually sort of fast track that process. And it seems that exercise can not fully block, maybe, but at least perhaps attenuate that pruning process due to stress. So it can reverse these stress-induced degradation to nerve cells in your brain. For that matter, it can reverse the degradation to nerve cells that's brought on by aging, which I think is pretty exciting.
All right. Wanted to bring you, Kate, into the conversation. What are the guidelines? How much exercise does it take to make a difference, especially for our mental health?
Well, the recommendations right now from the Academy of the American College of Sports Medicine is about 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, trying to get to about 150 minutes a week. And that can be intimidating to some people to try and do 30 minutes at a time, but you can do short bouts of exercise. So you can go out for a 10-minute walk or mix in some strength or balance training, trying to do 2 to 3 days a week of balance, agility, and coordination training, and 2 days a week of maybe some stretching. So those are the current recommendations.
So does it need to be to have this, you know, we're talking about exercise and mental health here. Does it need to be cardio? Does it need to, do you need to break a sweat? Do you need to sort of breathe a little harder than you usually would?
In terms of mental health, I don't think so. No, because so many people find such benefit in yoga or in meditation, even though meditation is an exercise, but things that are deep stretching or have a relaxation component, I think are also beneficial.
Okay. So, Scott, what is going on? You said that you've done so much research for this book. I think we've all heard about the endorphins or the running high.
Right.
Is this link really about that, or is it more than that?
So, broadly speaking, I would, Glenn might correct me, but I would put it in three basic categories. So there's endorphins, other aspects of brain chemistry on both an acute basis. So you go for a run or a bike ride or swim, and you have increased circulating levels of these sort of feel-good chemicals. That's on an acute basis. On a long-term basis, there's evidence that, you know, there's actual structural changes in the brain that appear to mimic some of the changes that are caused by antidepressants. So that's sort of the brain chemistry aspect. But two really important other aspects, you know, there's more to your mental health than your mood. So there's sort of a psychological aspect. A term that you might hear is self-efficacy. So the idea that I can set goals and accomplish them, which is something that can be difficult to see in part in your life when you're dealing with depression and or anxiety. But the idea that I'm the sort of person who actually can get things done, I can get off the couch, I can get mm-hmm. myself out the door, and seeing that in your life, on you know, in my case, a daily basis by running every day, I'm able to apply that to other parts of my life. And then there's a third aspect, I think, is sort of the big three would be cognition. So how we think about things. One, if you talk to a lot of runners, especially those with depression or anxiety, you'll hear that they go out, you know, something that's been bothering them for hours or wakes them up at 3 o'clock in the morning. They go out for a run, they go for a bike ride, whatever. They're able to think about the same problem differently. So there's something that happens when you're exercising that sort of brings a clarity that isn't possible throughout much of the rest of the day when you're struggling with mental health issues. So brain chemistry, psychology, and cognition sort of all working together to sort of go above and beyond what might be possible with other means of treatment.
Glenn, you're over there nodding. This is part of what we don't completely understand why.
Yeah, nodding in the affirmative, I should mention to the viewers. Yeah, I mean, well, first, Scott doesn't need me to validate anything. His book, I can't wait to read it. I read some excerpts online, and I'm really excited to do so. It looks really comprehensive, and look forward to that. The first thing that came to mind to me was networks in the brain. And so Scott talked about chemistry and self-efficacy. I think of resilience and robustness there too. And there's like Taleb has written some really wonderful books on anti-fragility, which reminds me of that too, and cognition. So all these in one, to me, I think of the brain network called the default mode network. And this network is upregulated in individuals that are clinically depressed. It's sort of a self-referential, very deep focus on me network. When you're engaged in something really meaningful, whether it be exercise or a conversation with peers or meditation or Tai Chi or Qigong or whatever it is, you're focused, and that default network is most likely off, and other networks are up, like the salience network and the pay attention to this network, if you will. So I think the idea, and some data are in, that exercise can do that, kind of, you know, to sort of detune this network that is so sort of active in those that are clinically depressed, have anxiety disorders, and this and that. So I think that's really exciting. That may be part of the what is going on.
Okay, let's start about getting started, though. And there are a few questions I want to ask you, but let's start with somebody who may have depression or anxiety. I imagine if you are consumed with a feeling of hopelessness, it's really hard to, even harder than it is for the rest of us, to take that first step, to commit to a walk or a run or a bike ride or a yoga class. What advice do you have for people going through this or for those who love them?
Okay, so for people trying to get into exercise and get started, something to think about is, like, what have you enjoyed in the past? I loved Scott, your comment about starting running in the ninth grade. So when I talk to somebody about getting back into exercise, I say, what did you really enjoy? And they'll say, well, I love to ride my bike, or I love to walk outside or run outside or some sort of game. So I try and introduce them into whatever their current version of that is. So what I do in my work, if somebody comes to me and says, I loved running, well, maybe we start with walking, or I really love playing team sports. Again, in my environment, working with seniors, I say, why don't we go to a group exercise class of some sort? That way you're around other people. And then it works with your brain networks. When you said brain networks, Glenn, I was thinking of the social networks and the social wellness that's so important with exercise and with our overall health. People with strong social networks, like not media networks, but being in the same room with other people, or going for a run with other people. People live longer. They have better blood pressure usually. They have better heart rate usually. So trying to encourage people to have that great social wellness and continue to have great relationships around them. And it's even important if you go to a class or if you go on a run, and if you don't even talk to anybody, but you're just around other people, that also has a great effect on your mood and your wellness.
And I think another key part of the social aspect, which you're right, is so important, especially for the mental health part, is if you're starting out and you're having a hard time with consistency, making that commitment to going to a class, or I'm going to meet you in the school parking lot at 6:30 to go for a walk, or, you know, we're going to meet at the bakery at 7 to go for a ride, that can be an effective enough sort of catalyst for somebody who's otherwise unable to, you know, function like they would like to. So the social aspect is both sort of the way to get you out there, but then once you're out there, then, you know, then it has all these other benefits too.
Okay. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about exercise and mental health. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. 399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Scott, one of the things you talk about in your book is that runners already have skills that they realize they have when they go off and try to seek outside help.
Yeah, so the second half of my book looks at the intersection of running and various common forms of treatment for depression and anxiety, such as cognitive behavior therapy or talk therapy or mindfulness. Sorry, I almost said mindlessness. So both as somebody researching this book and as somebody who has, you know, seen a therapist, I'm not pretending that running is the solution for everything or exercise is the solution for everything. But when I started seeing a therapist, he started talking about, we'll use cognitive behavioral therapy, which is real roughshod. Description would be acknowledging your thoughts, but not necessarily granting them legitimacy, challenging what might seem automatic thoughts and saying, well, do these thoughts have relevance? And really, if you run regularly or if you bike regularly, anything where you're pushing yourself, you're used to having these experiences where you might get the thought like, I can't keep going, or I need to slow down, or this hill's too long. And you have this experience of challenging these thoughts just through your practice of working out. And so once you then maybe start seeing somebody who sort of more formally introduces this form of treatment, you sort of have a step ahead of somebody who's never experienced that, because you're used to sort of having a daily experience of, oh, just because I had this thought doesn't mean it's legitimate. You know, should I challenge it? Is following through with this thought my best interest? That thought might be, I should spend the day on the couch because there's no point in anything. Exercise gives you that experience of saying, well, just because I had that thought, I don't have to accept it. I can say, well, maybe it is worth getting off the couch in the same way that it was worth continuing on with my bike ride or not giving up and going home for my run.
All right. Well, we do need to go to our first break. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Do you have experience with exercise and helping your mental health? Or are you curious about how to get started? Give us a call. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Booth Bay Railway Village, engineering hands-on experiences with Maine history for all ages. Learn more at railwayvillage.org.
On the next Fresh Air, the Omega Principle. Paul Greenberg, the award-winning author of Four Fish, writes in his new book about the science behind fish oil supplements and how the harvesting of the tiny fish who supply that and other industries is having a ripple effect, leading to less healthy and bountiful oceans. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. And tonight at 10 o'clock on Maine Public Television, POV and the Workers' Cup. In 2022, Qatar will host the biggest sporting event in the world, the FIFA World Cup. This documentary looks at how the future site is being constructed, utilizing African and Asian migrant workers. That's POV and the Workers' Cup, tonight at 10 on the stations of Maine Public Television.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the benefits of exercise, and not just for your physical well-being. With me in our studio, Scott Douglas. He's contributing editor for Runner's World and the author of Running is My Therapy. Kate Foley is the fitness manager at Ocean View at Falmouth. She has worked at both York Hospital and Maine Medical Center and coached middle school, high school, and college sports. And Glenn Stevenson is an associate professor of psychology and program coordinator for neuroscience at the University of New England. His expertise includes how exercise duration and frequency can impact biological markers associated with mood. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before I go to the calls, though, I want to ask you, Glenn, if you have studied exercise duration and frequency, what is your advice? What is our goal here?
Yeah, I mean, the right. So the data are all over the map. I think the most important thing anyone can do is, you know, first of all, I'm not a clinician, so I don't feel comfortable prescribing for people. I'm the doctor that doesn't help people, right?
So what's your own goal? What's your goal for yourself?
Right. I think that you might, if you graph it in your mind, so whoever's listening maybe has a pad of paper or is thinking of 3D space. The horizontal axis might be the level of intensity for you, and the y-axis, the perpendicular axis, might be the effect, the beneficial effect. I see it as a sort of inverted U shape, so that doing no exercise probably isn't good for the body and for other organ systems, including the gut microbiome, which maybe we'll get to, which is super exciting. And then as you sort of dial up the intensity, you derive all these benefits we've been talking a little bit about. But then if you push it too far, and especially don't know your medical history, that might be, you know, some untoward effects.
Okay. We're going to start in Portland with Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. And I have to say to the panel, thank you for bringing us up relative to mental health. On August 2nd of 2015, I had a stroke. And I had brain damage in the part of my brain that caused severe anxiety, fear of crowds, and it was really a rugged patch in my life. And one of the things that got me back going, if you will, was slow walks around the back cove. And I was able to be near people. I was able to kind of just function a little bit more. And as the months wore on, that walk started to become a run. And at the end of last year, I was able to run the beach to Beacon.
Wow.
And this year, as a result of just being able to keep and continue moving forward, and I can't remember who said it, but think about the things you love. I was a very avid cyclist. I rode my bicycle across Montana. I rode it across Alaska. And this year, for the first time, I was able to get back on my bike and ride my bike, and my brain was functioning, and the joy and the abject tranquility, if you will, that came from just those simple acts of slowly but steadily pushing myself forward and not giving up on myself and using exercise as a tool for my recovery was phenomenal.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in. What an amazing story. Mm-hmm. Kate, you were smiling and nodding pretty much the whole time he was talking.
Yeah, I was cheering you on, Chris. That's amazing. I'm so proud of you for being able to just find a starting point. And that's really the hardest place for a lot of people. And you've just made some really great, what I like to call SMART goals. You made a goal that was specific and measurable and attainable and realistic and time sensitive. Just even that small little bit of saying, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to walk a little bit farther. I'm going to walk a little bit farther the next day, and I'm going to get a little faster and get back on your bike. That's so wonderful. Congratulations.
Thanks, Chris, so much for calling and sharing your story. And good luck to you. Beach to Beacon, that is impressive. We're going to go to Stephanie calling from Portland. Hi, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I just got in my car and turned the radio on, which is all changed to 90.1. And your call, the conversation just immediately struck me as, wow, this is me. I am a long-term sufferer of, like, depression and anxiety, and I had an eating disorder for 10 years. And I was a runner as well, and during my recovery, I would continue to run. As I figured out the eating thing and took antidepressants, but nothing really worked from talk therapy to antidepressants except for the running. It wasn't extensive or crazy. It was just 3 miles, but there's something about the running that just organized my brain, slowed everything down, and just allowed me to, like, re-enter whatever I was doing with a clear head and continue on. And I just swear it saved me. And so I've just moved to call because it's just so wonderful to hear this topic brought up. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, Stephanie, thank you so much. I'm so glad you were moved to call, and I'm so glad you're doing better. And Scott, this is a big point that you're making, right, is that therapy is fine and medication is fine, but that exercise and particularly running in your case ought to be a frontline method of therapy, not something thought about as an afterthought.
Right. So in some other countries, Canada, the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Australia, exercise is considered, as you said, a first-line treatment. So if you go to a physician and say, I have these symptoms, the guidelines there, not necessarily everybody there does it, but the guidelines there would be for the physician to say, to recommend exercise along with medication or talk therapy. Whereas here in the United States, if you look at, say, the official guidelines of the American Psychological Association, that exercise is not among the initial things that are recommended that for people who report these symptoms. So the United States has a lot of catching up to do in this regard, unfortunately. And like I said at the outset, you know, like I shouldn't have had to write this book to learn this. You know, I was sort of surprised that that's the case.
Go ahead.
Also in Japan, they have a practice called forest bathing, and I won't say the Japanese word because I will mispronounce it, but that's their preventative care, is they tell people to go out and walk in nature and spend equal time walking and just being absorbed in nature. And living in Maine, well, what's better than going outside and enjoying the outdoors?
Glenn, are you surprised that Stephanie says that running worked better for her than medication?
Not at all. So first, Stephanie's congratulations for your courage and thank you for the call. Wonderful to hear the positive effects that you accrued through running. Running is produces such a comprehensive effect on brain and body that, and I'm not discounting the effects of medication and talk therapy. They can certainly save lives. But running produces such a comprehensive effect. For one, we know that it does one of the good things that meds and talk therapy do. It actually boosts BDNF levels, which I know Scott wrote about in his book, this peptide called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's sort of like nutrition for your brain cells. So imagine that just by the act of running, you're upregulating the concentration of this chemical in your brain to help protect your brain.
Stephanie, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. We're going to go to Naples and Dre. Hi, Dre. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. Thank you for this five-day-a-week place to listen. Intense working out was actually on par with time I spent with one good therapist I've had in my life, and there's nothing else like it. It's helped with trauma effects recovery for me. Last year, I developed both an upper and a lower body injury, and I need to reinvent my workouts because I feel really disconnected from the enormous benefits. I feel pained in my legs, and I'm scared. And I'd love to hear more about the microbiome. I asked my primary care physician about it last year, and he kind of laughed, and it kind of made me think, oh, that's just going to be for certain select people to have them help with their mental health at some point. It's not available and may never be available.
Trey, you bring up two great points that I wanted to get to in this program, so I thank you so much for doing those. And Kate, this is probably an issue for a lot of people you work with. Mm-hmm. As we age, we're maybe, or because of injury or just because changes in our bodies, we're not able to do that thing we did all along. So what advice do you have for Dre about rethinking her exercise and what she might be able to do? Dre, what did you do before? Were you a runner, a cyclist?
Oh, my. Really, actually, I got heavily into the weights where I learned every muscle. I had specific different select body parts each time I visited the gym four and 5 days a week. And lots of stretching, yoga, cardio. Cardio came after weight training. So I loved weight training more than anything. But it did keep me inside. I'm a little afraid with inattention on the road to cycle or run. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So a great place to start would be find some place like a Y or a local gym and find somebody who is certified through the American College of Sports Medicine as a clinical exercise physiologist. Those are people with bachelor's degrees or a registered clinical exercise physiologist. There aren't as many of those people because they're usually employed in hospitals, but a clinical exercise physiologist should be able to help you because they will be able to understand what the injury is in the lower and in the upper body and the best way to guide you to get back to really enjoying the weight training that you enjoyed, doing the cardio that you enjoyed, getting you back into the yoga and really getting you back out and active.
Okay, and let's talk about the microbiome. I know you said, Glenn, that you want to bring that up.
What
does the microbiome have to do with exercise and mental health?
A lot, yeah. So, so Dre, I encourage you to have another conversation with the healer you spoke to before that laughed. The microbiome so is essentially all the gut microbes we have in our intestines, right? So think of all these bacteria, 99.99% of them are really helpful for us. We have a symbiotic relationship. They do things for us like metabolize fiber, which, by the way, is great for the diet. So, right. So as neuroscientists, we forgot that there's a body below the skull, right? We focus so much on the brain that sometimes we forget there are other organs. Well, lo and behold, although it is true that the brain does regulate the rest of the body, it turns out that the gut regulates the brain. So depending upon how healthy your gut is, which can be modified by diet, exercise, lifestyle choices in general, that can directly impact brain health. It's really fascinating. I mean, just a quick side story to this is that we're learning now that Parkinson's disease is showing pathology in the gut years before we see it in the brain. And the inclusions, the pathology is almost identical, which is really good news. Maybe we can diagnose and treat this disorder earlier. So lots of
talk
about.
And this is nascent.
Yes,
right?
That's right. I mean, it's a hot area, but everyone's sort of jumping on the bandwagon. Not everyone necessarily has expertise in it, but I think, you know, we'll expect to hear more good things.
Trey, good luck to you. We're going to move on to Gorham and Beth. Hi, Beth. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling. I had an accident a couple of years ago and fractured my hip and femur and had to go. I was out of town and I had surgery and rehab there and then have rehab back in Maine when I was able to come home. The one exercise I had enjoyed in the past was walking, and it was a real struggle to do that now. And in physical therapy, I really love the stationary bike. So once I was done with physical therapy, I joined a gym and do that now and just really enjoy it. Of course, before all of this, I had been dealing with depression and then not to be able to walk and do my job and things like that. It could have been a whole lot worse, but now, once I got going with riding the bike and doing other things to get walking again, I felt so much better.
Beth, thank you so much for calling. And it's just what you've been saying, Kate. Find something else.
It's great that she found going to the gym and using a stationary bike, having it non-weight bearing, and is going to be great for that hip and femur to be able to heal.
All right. Thanks, Beth. And we'll move, let's see, here to Cumberland and Nyssa. Hi, Nyssa. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and add, I've been having health issues for, 10 years. And recently got a diagnosis that includes allodynia, which is where the brain misinterprets non-painful stimuli as pain. And one of the things that I started doing was walking. And since I started walking, and I actually walk dogs for a living now, I haven't had a single flare-up of my symptoms. I've been able to wean myself off of, I'm down from 12 medications a day down to 6. And it's just made a huge difference. I've actually been able to gain weight for the first time in my life. I was down to 85 pounds at one point. Now I'm at a healthy 120. And it's just been amazing to see how something as simple as walking a dog outside every day has made a huge impact on my health.
Nyssa, thanks so much for calling. I want to focus on something here, Scott, that she said, walking a dog outdoors every day. What do we know about, and you touched on this a little bit already, Kate, what do we know about this idea of whatever your exercise is, doing that exercise outdoors?
excuse me. So there is some evidence that Glenn talked about brain-derived neurotrophic factor. There is some evidence that there's greater release of that, greater levels of that when you're outside, when you work out outside than if you do so indoors. I'm really hesitant to say don't work out indoors if that's going to be the difference between not working out and working out.
Right. Our last caller who found a gym and an exercise bike, it works for her.
Right. But if you can get outside, if it's reasonable to do so, most, you know, I think there's growing evidence that is that in and of itself sort of adds a little boost to the mental health benefits of a given workout. I can get into the details if you want, but there's a study where after people ran in nature, they were given a task where they were looking at pleasant and unpleasant images, and they focused more on the pleasant images after having worked out outside compared to when they had worked out inside. After they'd worked out inside, they were not as drawn to the pleasant images. So something about being outdoors, this for, you know, sort of our version of forest bathing. I mean, that's how we evolved. That's mm-hmm. we're meant to be outside. You know, the thing that we're not supposed to be doing is, other than when we're on main calling, is sitting around inside in a chair. So it's you know, it's sort of not surprising that there might be an extra boost to the nature aspect of it.
Nyssa, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. Yeah, no vitamin D in here. We do have to take a quick break, but before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. We are going to learn about how observing our landscapes and our natural world can offer clues to the past. Reading rural landscapes. Email comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. Meantime, if you'd like to join our conversation about exercise and mental health, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Bay Chamber Concerts, presenting its summer concert series and Screen Door Festival in Rockport, Maine, July 12th through August 19th. BayChamberConcerts.org.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guests are Dr. Carl Hart, a neuroscientist, and Dr. Leanna Wen, Public Health Commissioner for the City of Baltimore. They'll talk about America's opioid crisis and how one city is finding its way out. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. This evening, President Trump is scheduled to announce his choice to be the nominee for the Supreme Court to replace retiring Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. President Trump's remarks are scheduled for 9 this evening. Both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television will carry those remarks live, followed by analysis. Maine Public Radio will carry the special coverage within an extra hour of All Things Considered, and Maine Public Television will offer a live and updated PBS NewsHour. Again, both at 9 this evening.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, why exercise is good for your mental health. Joining me today, Scott Douglas, the author of 8 books. His most recent is Running is My Therapy. Glenn Stevenson is an associate professor of psychology and program coordinator for neuroscience at the University of New England. And Kate Foley is fitness manager at Ocean View at Falmouth. She has worked in cardiac rehab at both York Hospital and Maine Medical Center. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Before we go any further, Scott, I want to make a point that you make very strongly in your book and in an article I read that you've written, is that you shouldn't just take up exercise and ignore the advice of your therapist. Sometimes medication is essential, and don't just make a rash decision about this, right?
Right. So my own personal experience, I said earlier, you know, I've seen a therapist at times. I currently take an antidepressant. I'm not saying that exercise is a cure-all. It's certainly a key part of, you know, anybody's mental health. But there's nothing – it's not a failure of exercise. It's not a failure of you as a person to seek other means of treatment if you're still not functioning in the way that you want to function.
We have an email from Michael. My grandfather used to say, if you walk long enough and far enough, you'll come to the solution of just about any problem. He claimed it had something to do with the right side being connected to the left part of your brain and the left leg being connected to the right side of your brain and the rhythmic left, right of walking, running, or cycling, massaging the brain somehow. I guess the reasoning is that it gets you out of either being in the right side of your brain or the left side of your brain and using both, Michael. So is Michael's grandfather right, Glenn?
Absolutely. So John Adams comes to mind. And I think in his personal letters, if I remember, and your readers or listeners, sorry, may correct me, I think he walked 10 miles a day and did a lot of deep thinking. And, he, you know, not a bad, he had a pretty important part, I think, to the history of this country, right? So I would agree, yeah.
Scott. Also, Thoreau famously said, never trust a thought arrived at sitting down, arrived at sitting down.
So Laura on the Maine Calling Facebook page writes, dance, dance, dance. Dancing improves physical fitness, helps combat depression and isolation, improves balance and memory, encourages creativity and social connection, and it's so much fun. Kate, I'm guessing you say hear, hear.
Absolutely, yes. Dance, dance, dance.
Okay, great. We're going to move to Portland. And Sue, hi, Sue, go ahead.
Hi. In 2016, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I decided that I was going to walk across the Grand Canyon as a fundraiser for the Cancer Society. So every day I went out and I walked, almost every day, 6 miles, and it totally changed my outlook on everything. First of all, just being outside and then having that goal in mind, it was 6 months in the future. I totally forgot about the cancer for 6 months.
Okay, Sue, thank you so much for calling.
That's great. You made a smart goal without even thinking about it. You made it specific that you wanted to walk across the Grand Canyon and measurable that you were going to walk that distance. You made it attainable by training, realistic, and you had a timeline. So that's wonderful.
Thank you, Sue. We'll go to Peter, who's calling from Winslow. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
I'm just calling from my memory of being a young father of young children. And young children every now and again get into a fuss, and you don't know what to do about them. They don't seem to stop. Well, I would just pick them up and take them outside, and immediately the fuss would stop, always. It's just you've got things to look at outside. The leaves are waving, the birds are singing, the grass is green, and it works on kids, and obviously from what we've been hearing earlier, it works on adults. Being outside is a treatment all by itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for that comment. I wholeheartedly agree. And may I also add, could we maybe have the courage to turn off our technological devices when we're outdoors too, to really unplug and just enjoy what's out there. I'm in my middle 50s. I can still remember my parents saying, go outside, run around and play. And oh my gosh, I remember being outside all day. Maybe not during school days, but at least on the weekends. And there is something to be in touch with nature. Here's something crazy. How about take off your shoes and your socks and feel the earth on your feet and walk around, as long as you're not on the beach with sharp shells or something like that. But I think it's absolutely critical for mental health, physical health, thinking. I think we've lost touch as a society with nature, and I think we need to get back to that.
Peter, thank you. We'll go to Mike calling from Lebanon. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask or offer a quick comment and then also ask a quick question, if I could, as well, of your guests. One observation that I've made, the more that I exercise, go to the gym, it almost seems as if my body asks for more healthier things in my life on its own. I find the craving to drink more water, to consume healthier foods and healthier calories versus when I'm sedentary. And exercise seems to have a snowball effect in that way, if you will.
Scott.
Yeah, that's a great observation and a real common one that I don't think a lot of people who don't exercise, might not appreciate. There's so many ways that once you start taking care of part of your body, then it's not like you are forcing yourself not to eat Cheetos, to pick an example. Cheetos might not just be as appealing. Getting more sleep becomes more appealing. Not having as much stress in your life becomes more appealing. It all works together to sort of 1 + 1 = 3 sort of improvement in your overall life.
And it's easier to get a full night's sleep if you've had a good workout that day.
Yeah.
Mike, you said you had a comment and a question. What's your question?
Sure. Thank you very much. One thing I wanted to ask is that when I'm working out, and like I said, about sometimes 3-4 days a week, and I also work a very physical job. I work in an orchard. So I find myself in a state of like physical soreness almost all the time. And I'm curious what your panelists think about this idea of like trigger point therapy or what they call myofascial release, which seems to have be common amongst like the exercise community, but there still seems a little bit of controversy in it in like the mainstream scientific community. And I was curious to get your opinion on that. Thank you very much.
Hi, I can talk about foam rolling in the myofascial release. You can do a little bit of foam rolling. The thing is that people sometimes overdo it. So get a foam roller that feels comfortable to you. They have different densities. You can try them out at any sporting goods store. And then I would go to a website, probably something sponsored by the American College of Sports Medicine or the National Strength and Conditioning Association. They have done some studies on myofascial release, and they should have some instruction there. If you're feeling really sore all the time because you're working out so much and maybe it's a busy time of year at the orchard, I would encourage you to take some rest days and do some light activity on those days rather than going wholeheartedly at the gym.
We have a Facebook comment from Jess. I find cutting and splitting firewood works, especially swinging them all. Great exercise. Well, there we go. We'll start thinking about winter.
Great way to take out frustration, too.
Yes,
there you go.
Right.
Yes. For your mental health.
Good. We're going to go to Linda, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say I just finished treatment for a stage 3C colorectal cancer. And in the research that I did, I found that recurrence is reduced by almost 50% by exercise after your surgery. And it's not something that a lot of the doctors or anyone refers you to. And it'd be really nice if physicians, as part of their prescriptions, would recommend exercise instead of just medication or have them work in concert.
Okay, I can speak about that one as well. The American College of Sports Medicine that I keep going back to, they have worked on something called Exercise is Medicine, and that is creating a bridge or a link from the exercise community and researchers like I've done to try and get to doctors and say, you know, we need to encourage people to do more exercise for like your colorectal cancer recovery and so many other things like we're talking about today. So there are things that are being worked on, and hopefully we can bridge that gap.
But it's still the case, unless things have happened in the last couple months, that a standard medical education, you know, there's not a bunch of core exercise as medicine classes. The body is, you know, sort of treated as a series of systems and parts, not an integrated whole.
Yeah, I've had students who said that they only had a couple days in medical school where they were talking about health and wellness a little bit, and then it was back to the medicine. Yeah. So we really need more exercise physiologists like me out there.
Yeah, Linda, thank you for your call and good luck to you. We have an email from Mark. Was wondering if you have any recommendations for low impact exercise for someone with a brain injury. I've been diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy and have over 30 concussions. I do have a mountain bike and have cycled most of my life, but there are other types of low impact exercises you would suggest.
There's a lot of parts to that. And without talking to you myself and seeing you in front of me and how you move, I hesitate to recommend anything. But I would go back to your doctor and see if they can recommend maybe a specific type of physical therapist that's worked with that a lot.
All right. We'll go to Diane, who's calling from Poland. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a caregiver for a friend who has Alzheimer's. And she is very reluctant to go on any medication, and her physician encourages her, well, if you're not going on medication, let's boost up the exercise. And I wondered if your guests could speak how exercise impacts that brain function with the amyloid plaques, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a really good question. As you might imagine, there's a lot of variability, Diane. But so, for example, you can have an individual who has a very high plaque load in the brain, and they're perfectly seemingly cognitively healthy. And you can have on the other end of the scale someone that has very little plaque load, and yet they have great decrement in memory function, and so on and so forth. So, the medication is a big issue. It depends on what kind of medications the person you're caring for is on. Many of those are cholinergic in nature, and there is additive effects of exercise with the cholinergic system. But again, I'm not recommending anything. We also know that a history of exercise can protect the brain. So regardless of what the plaque load may look like, a history of exercise can be protective in that sense of seeing less decrement in physical function and mental function.
I can speak about the exercise for the body part. One of the great things about Ocean View at Falmouth is that we have a continuum of care, and we have legacy memory care, which is specific to Alzheimer's and dementia, and we do provide exercise for them every day. So I would focus on things that are activities of daily living, getting up and down, pushing, pulling objects, things like that. And the other thing that we've really found is how much they enjoy music and music from a younger time in their life. So if you're having a hard time getting her moving, maybe find some music from her ear that she might enjoy and you might get her to move to.
Thank you, Diane, for your call. Barry posted on Facebook, I'm in my 60s now, but suffered from severe depression in my youth through my 30s. Running and a good diet, quality, unrefined foods have been my long time very successful, and he puts in quote, meds. Prescription meds all had nasty side effects. I'm now in incredibly fabulous health and planning to continue for the coming decades.
Yeah, so we haven't talked about sort of the exercise versus antidepressant aspect of the side effects of antidepressants. So, what are the side effects of exercise? Being in better health, being at a good weight, being in a better mood. So that's when you look at exercise versus medication, that's a big thing that is in exercise's favor, that the side effects are all good versus some of the side effects that people experience that aren't so good on medications.
All right. Well, that's the last call or comment, and I feel badly for those of you I've left hanging. Obviously, a popular program today, and thank you all for being here. Scott Douglas, whose voice you just heard, has a new book out. It's called Running is My Therapy. Scott is a contributing editor for Runner's World and the author of 8 books. Also here today, Kate Foley, the fitness manager at Ocean View at Falmouth, and Glenn Stevenson, an associate professor of psychology and program coordinator for neuroscience at the University of New England. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a whole bunch of links and audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. And yes, at long last, you have heard the new Maine Calling theme music. That's what's in the background right now. This was written by Mike Jandro. We couldn't be happier with it. More than 300 people submitted compositions. Mike Jandro's came out on top. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, how to recognize the past by looking at the landscape that surrounds us. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.